Parkinson's disease. I don't know if you've had a lot of experience with people treating like Parkinson's.
Yeah, so I'm a neurologist and I do see patients of all different types of neurological disorders. And so Parkinson's is one of the diseases that certainly we see a lot of, yeah.
Okay. And so how would you determine if one has Parkinson's disease and not a similar disease such as multiple system atrophy or essential tremor disease? Like, how do you make that differentiation?
So a lot of different factors. Parkinson's disease, well, multisystem atrophy is also one of those diseases that usually affect more of the elderly, so usually around the age of 60 and above. Parkinson's in general is a disease that comes on, it's a neurodegenerative disease. So for example, Parkinsonism looks very similar to Parkinson's, but is basically tremor that is caused by other things. So certainly when you're, interviewing the patient, you ask a lot of different questions, exposures, environmental factors, things of that nature. And that guides you towards whether this is something that started on its own over time, or were there certain things that are red flags that make you think, maybe there's something that's going on. So the things that are characteristic of Parkinson's, there's specific criteria that we adhere to. And that criteria helps us diagnose Parkinson's. And it's a combination of clinical features. So for example, we categorize these features in like on and off symptoms or positive negative symptoms. So for example, a Parkinson's patient, could be what you usually typically see a patient who has a tremor. Tremors are resting tremor. So the difference between a central tremor, for example, which is also a disease, is considered a benign type of tremor that can run in families. It's a tremor that when you're like grabbing something, the tremor gets worse. Yeah. So patients, for example, come in because they have difficulty eating, or their handwriting has changed and it's hard for them to write. Parkinson's tremor is the complete opposite. So it's a resting tremor. Okay. So, and it's called kind of a pill rolling tremor. So think of it as like the patient's hand is resting and they have this kind of tremor all the time. But when they go and grab a cup of coffee or they're fine. Okay. So that's very characteristic of Parkinson's. An additional on symptom is, for example, they have their gait. So the way they walk has a number of different features. So for example, they have this kind of shuffling gait. Okay, so think of it as like you have weights on your feet and you're trying to move, so they shuffle, okay? And then they have a difficulty stopping. Okay, so one of the things that a test, for example, that we do on patients who have Parkinson's is we ask them tap 3 times and they have difficulty stopping. Okay, so they always go out of the 3 times. And so that's one of the on symptoms that they have. They start slow and then they can't stop and they become very fast and they stop. And so a lot of these patients will fall because they freeze, their gait freezes. It's very hard for them to initiate a movement. Then their feet are kind of stuck in the floor, they're shuffling, but they have the inability to actually stop when they're needing to stop, and then they kind of stoop forward.
Okay.
Another type of exam, a finding that we do is we're actually, when the patient's standing up, we actually have them kind of stand still and we try to push them a little bit, move them a little bit. And they have the inability to stay still. They can't really balance themselves. So they kind of fall backwards or fall frontwards because they can't stop a movement. So that's also a very classical feature. Something that happens in Parkinson's, and I don't know if you, if you've seen, for example, a classical description of a freezing movement is, for example, Awakenings, if you ever saw that movie. So it's a movie with Robert De Niro, and it's a movie that shows the effect that carbidopa levodopa, which is a medication, the medication that's the most effective for Parkinson's. And basically, one of the features, the off features of Parkinson's is freezing of, so you see your facial expressions of people who have Parkinson's change.
Yeah.
They become very inexpressive. And it's called masked faces.
Yeah.
And that kind of develops over time. And a lot of times you ask for them, like, look at a, you know, let me look at a driver's license, or let me look at pictures of you. And you can actually see over the years that their facial expressions have significantly changed. Aside from that, it's also that freezing of movement. So they are trying to initiate gait and they can't. But if you give them a pattern, or if you give them something, so for example, in that movie, if you watch it, there was kind of a checkered board floor. And if they had the checkered board floor, they could walk. But if it stopped, then they couldn't continue walking. So that freezing is characteristic, very characteristic of Parkinson's. Of the things that differentiate, so for example, for essential tremor, the tremor in essential tremor is a kinetic tremor. It's a tremor of movement when you're grabbing something, when you're eating. The tremor in Parkinson's is a resting tremor. Essential tremor is otherwise a benign condition, doesn't have any other things besides tremor that does progress over time. Multisystems atrophy is also a neurodegenerative disease, just like Parkinson's is. It has a different pathophysiology, so you know why it happens is different. But of the things that MSA has, and there are different variants of MSA. For example, you can have the cerebellar variant, so these patients can present with a lot of what we call ataxia, a cerebellar ataxia, so they're very unsteady. They have what we call dysautonomia, which is fluctuations in their blood pressure, you know, so you have to keep regulating their blood pressure. It'll go down or up at different times. Eventually, both Parkinson's and MSA patients will develop dementia at the later stages. Okay, so this is a way of differentiating, for example, the rare forms of dementia from Parkinson's. Okay. MSA has the inability to look upwards, and so these are little things that you look on the exam. So MSA patients don't have the masked facies. You know, they have trouble eating, okay, because they can't, they have their eye movements freeze a bit, so they can't really look down and, you know, up, so they can look up, but they can't look down, so they can't really eat well, you know, and that's one of the symptoms, the initial symptoms. Again, they might have the type of tremor that MSA has is an ataxic tremor, which is a cerebellar tremor, which think of it as like very broad kind of tremor. So you're trying to grab that and you do like this and you have difficulty. While the resting tremor, the essential tremor is this,
yeah.
Okay? The ataxic tremor is that. And then the resting tremor of Parkinson's is like this. So the clinical exam is very important, the features of the exam to differentiate those three. And then you have to examine the patient. One of the classical things that you see in Parkinson's is something called cogwheel rigidity. So as your joints should be nice and smooth, right? Patients who have Parkinson's, you tend to feel a little bit of pressure as you're moving the joint. Feels like you're going through like a wheel, a cogwheeling, you know, so it feels like this. And when you ask them to, you know, do something with the other hand, so you're distracting the person with the other hand, the cogwheeling rigidity worsens. So that's very characteristic of Parkinsonian clinical exam.
Wow, that's a lot. So you mentioned like lifestyle and like factors like that. How can like one's lifestyle lead to the development of Parkinson's?
So there are certain things that have been shown that, you know, certainly, you know, Parkinsonism is associated. So Parkinsonism is having some of the features of Parkinson's, but they are actually happens because you are exposed to pesticides. Or because, so land miners, for example, developed a lot of Parkinsonian features, but they didn't really respond to Parkinson medications. They didn't have the entire thing. They were younger when they developed them, and it was secondary to all these environmental exposures. Parkinson patients, there are a few things that have been shown that are actually, that can actually, you see less of in Parkinson's. For example, an odd one is cigarette smoking. So, for example, there is a very significant decrease in history of cigarette smoking in patients who develop Parkinson's disease, and it's felt that maybe the nicotine has a protective effect. Cholesterol levels have been also shown to be associated, so low cholesterol levels help protect against Parkinson's. Alcohol seems to have also a bit of a protective effect as well. But usually, we don't know what causes Parkinson's. We don't know why people have Parkinson's. We know it can run in families. There likely is a genetic predisposition to it. And environmental, certainly certain medications, certain environmental factors could maybe, turn on the disease earlier.
Okay. Do you think alcohol and nicotine have an effect on the dopamine in the brain?
So it could be. So one of the theories more so with nicotine is that it could affect or decrease. So by the time that you already have symptoms in Parkinson's, about 70% of all your dopamine neurons have died. Okay, so when you start, developing Parkinson's or lack of, degeneration of these neurons very early on, but your brain's able to compensate and you don't really notice those symptoms. So, there might be, a pathway or something that's protective because of the things that people have studied is, if you have Parkinson's, it's very hard for you to smoke, you have this tremor and this and that, but people develop Parkinson's later in life. And there's an association of decrease of smoking earlier in life, right? So when you haven't had symptoms yet. So if that, whether that kind of slows down the degeneration of dopamine is one of those theories that could very well be.
That's interesting. Have you ever seen a deep brain stimulation work to benefit someone with Parkinson's?
So it can be life-changing. Okay, so a DBS is particularly helpful in those patients who have positive symptoms, okay? And it helps control a lot of the tremor, for example. It helps a lot with the gait and the movement and the fluidity of the movement. So it is, they usually, when they do, when they see if you're a candidate, certainly if you have more with regards to tremor and, shuffling of gait and inability to initiate a movement and that kind of thing, they actually, can do sort of a trial with stimulating to see if you're going to respond to DBS or not. And it can certainly help significantly, prolong the ability of a patient to function, okay. When you're a good candidate. So, yeah.
Okay. And how does that work? Does it affect the dopamine?
So it stimulates, you're basically stimulate you, it's a stimulator that you, that you put kind of in the deep nuclei of the brain where the neurons that are rich in the substantia nigra, which is where the most of the dopaminergic neurons are. It's there and it kind of stimulates or hyperexcites the neurons that are still there, okay, so that you can think of as you're trying to provoke a movement, and you're going straight instead of waiting for the, sensory input of having your brain think of something so that you can move something. You're basically stimulating it directly so that those neurons will move regardless of, that inability of that sensory input of coming. Okay. So it has, the DBS, it's frequency, electricity, yeah. And so you kind of adjust it and move it around, the frequencies. And depending on that, over time, one of the things that happens is that, because there continues to be neuronal death and dopamine tends to eventually over time, just kind of those neurons start dying and dying. There's a lot of lack of dopamine. You keep trying to increase the frequency and there's less and less improvement. So you know, the half-life of a DBS can be limited based on that. And the time that you, so if you are very, you know, late stage Parkinson's, a DBS is likely not going to be as useful as if you're, you know, in the close to, you know, kind of in the middle times of diagnosis. Because if you put it too early on, you know, think of it as like your brain gets used to it. It's no longer effective. So you want it to last as much as you can. So the earlier that you put it, then, you know, in 5-6 years or so, it's not as effective as it was at the beginning. So you don't want to give it, put it in too early on. You want to put it kind of in the middle phase to try to prolong that middle phase. You know, if you put it in the late stage, you're not going to get the same response.
Okay. And do other medications that fake as dopamine, do they work
efficiently? So there is a number of medications we use. You know, the carbidopa, levodopa, MAOI inhibitors, there's a combination of those. And usually what we try to do is, depending on when you're diagnosed, what your symptoms are, you know, we start with certain medications that try to help, you know, recapture and retain more dopamine. There are some of them more effective than others. And again, it all really depends on how severe your Parkinson's is, what type of, you know, or do you have more positive or negative on and off symptoms. Out of all the Parkinson medications, carbidopa, levodopa is the most effective, but it also is a medication that your body can kind of get used to over time. And so, you know, it may not necessarily be the first drug that you try. You know, you depending on how things are, you might try milder drugs. You know, there are side effects of these medications over time as well. And so you can get something called dyskinesias, you know, these kind of abnormal movements that happen over time. So if you see, for example, Michael J. Fox, you yeah. know, and you see, and he has a DBS, and he takes a lot of these drugs as well. And a DBS, you know, you may have very mild to moderate form of Parkinson's where you can be with a DBS and not need anything else, but most patients will require drugs just like they require the monitoring. So the DBS, you know, those movements that he has, those are more movements that are caused by long-term being on long-term medication, you know, and it's very hard for you to get rid of those movements, even if you stop the medications once you've been on them for a long time. And in his case, having been diagnosed so early on means that he required very high doses of everything for it to be even effective at all at this point. So you have to take into consideration that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right. That's not long.
Yeah. Thank you so much.